We're in the middle of Black History Month here in February, and we'll talk about the Black Archives there at FAMU in the second hour. It's a pretty fascinating conversation. You don't want to miss that. Jeremy Matlow is here. Commissioner Matlow will talk with us about some of the recent developments over there at the city, including his proposed city commission pay hike. You stay with me.
Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny, brought to you by Widen Glass, Tallahassee's first name in glass for your home or office. Merrymaids, call Merrymaids. Relax, and it's done.
In 1945, Jack Widen started a glass company in Tallahassee. Now, over 70 years and three generations later, it's still working every day, doing just as Jack wanted, giving his customers real solutions for replacing window glass, providing custom-cut mirrors, and supplying superior bath and shower enclosures. Local building contractors know Widen Glass takes care of Tallahassee business. They prefer Widen because of their precision and mastery of eye-catching storefront glass and countertop glass. It's a fact. When you choose Widen Glass, you're working with real glass people who will take care of you to your complete satisfaction. It's what Jack Widen wanted, and it's been the Widen way of doing business for over 70 years. Widen Glass, Tallahassee's first family in glass since 1945. Call Widen Glass today or visit them online, 850-222-5781 or widenglass.com.
Commissioner Matlow is here. We're going to talk with him at length about all that's been going on in his world and on behalf of the city of Tallahassee, you and I, me and you. He is no want for making waves, that guy. He just loves to, I don't know that that's his intention. I mean, he just doesn't seem to pay a whole lot of mind to the status quo in some cases. But in other cases, in other ways, I find him quite, I don't know, mundane about things. Makes great pizza, too, by the way. If you've ever had Gain Street Pies pizza, but it's pretty good. Carl, you like Gain Street Pies pizza? Yes, he does. I think that's your favorite pizza, isn't it? Isn't that your favorite now? Yeah. Carl's totally down with the GSP. And I have to say, in full disclosure here, transparency or whatever that amounts to, that he is a able and often noted supporter of local activities. His company and his partner and all the people that make Gain Street Pies happen, I mean, they're pretty generous folks. Particularly community-minded, I might say. They keep an eye on the needs of local charities and efforts to improve the way of life for so many folks around us, including you and me. And I think that's really what drew him to consider running for city commissioner. And lo and behold, he did it. And it's fair to say he's an outsider, even some have described him as a disruptor. I think that's fair. I don't think he thinks of himself that way. Well, I'll ask him that when we have a chance to talk with him here in a minute. But of late, he's on record for suggesting a pay hike for city commissioners, and largely in keeping with the idea that county commissioners make considerably more, about twice what city commissioners are paid. City commissioners get $39,580 a year, whereas their county counterparts are getting $80,289, and that's by way of state law. So we'll find out where that is. Apparently, there was a vote among the commissioners, and Elaine Bryant, Diane Williams Cox, they were in support of it. But the mayor and Commissioner Richardson, they didn't agree. They were opposed. So we'll find out more there. I should point out, too, that Gain Street Pies is the presenting sponsor for this year's Tallahassee Food Challenge. You've heard me speak a great deal about that, and you can plan on me doing further, because when we look at the numbers, such as they are, in our community and around the 11 counties that occupy North Central Florida here, man, it's a challenge. So we've had opportunity of late to look further into those statistics, coming by way of the Florida Chamber of Commerce. They look at such things with great interest, economic growth and such. They also look at the other side of that, the degree of poverty and unemployment, and it translates into the business of housing and food. You know, you're probably aware of the fact that Leon County ranks third in the state for food scarcity, which really just comes down to the availability of food that is, let's say, good food, healthy food, or healthful. Not just availability, but accessibility and affordability. Right. So when you start looking at those numbers and you find out that there's a significant number of households that are at or below the poverty guideline as it is established by a federal government. And for a family of four, that amounts to making less annually than about $23,000. Yeah. So kind of do the math there real quick in your head and think about that. You know what it takes for housing and food and transportation and just the basics, clothing and, you know, medical. I mean, can you even talk about medical services at that point? Well, in any case, the Tallahassee Food Challenge is about raising that awareness and motivating you and I to give generously and give often. And to make that even easier for you, you can go to the Tallahassee Food Challenge website, just as it's pronounced, TallahasseeFoodChallenge.com. And there you'll find a bunch of info. And we continue to update that site for you. It's brought to you by not only Gain Street Pies, but Wood and Glass, Truck and Car Concepts, Sellers Tile here in Tallahassee, Sperry and Associates, Southern Smiles, Family Dentistry. All of these people come together along with Tallahassee Family Magazine, Moose Magnificat Radio, and this program because we think it's worthwhile. You and I are worth it. Remember that little idea that it's better to give than to receive? How does that work? You know, it's good for you. It's good for you and I when we give generously, when we give what we can. But when we do, we're the ones that are getting blessed, man. So you want to bless yourself? Yeah. Find a need and fill it. Find a conversation and add to the enlightenment of someone else. Find an opportunity to make a difference. And when you give to an organization like Second Harvest of the Big Bend, don't forget they have that 4-to-1 buying ratio. Right. So somebody asked me, what is this food challenge thing? I mean, is that like a fundraiser or a food drive? No, it really isn't. No, and it's the same sort of advertising campaign that any business would engage in. I mean, you know, car dealership, a cell phone company, or a bank, grocery stores, yeah. Any of that that you can think of where advertising is the business of raising awareness and providing a call to action, motivating people to move, creating demand for. It's just that in this case, our client is a hungry kid. And our message is real simple. Take the challenge. Fill a bowl. Feed the hungry. Because hunger never takes a holiday. You and I may. Out of sight, out of mind. But it is always a question mark for a hungry child. Will I eat today? Right here in your town. Right here in your county. Right there in your neighborhood. So, the Tallahassee Food Challenge says, if we can get 1,000 people to give $10, that's 10 grand. Guess what? With the buying power over there at Second Harvest, that's $40,000 worth of food. Think about that.
People trust Sellers for better tile, carpet, and hardwood flooring. Sellers Flooring Advisor Ryan Fitzgerald.
We understand most people don't come in with great knowledge of what they're looking for or what they need. So at Sellers, what we try to do is use our expertise to guide you through the process.
Get Sellers working for you.
We make it easy, and we have the experts on staff to get you where you need to be, and we give you the options.
On Capital Circle Northeast, just north of Mahan Drive, call 656-8453. Online at SellersTile.com. Witten Glass has been taking care of business since 1945. When you call Witten Glass, you're dealing with experienced, reliable professionals who offer only the best. Like Witten's top-of-the-line bath enclosures that provide style and luxury at an affordable price. Eye-catching storefronts are a specialty at Witten Glass. We'll help you design it and install it. Witten Glass, the first name in glass replacement. Call 222-5781.
Hi, I'm Melissa Bruner, and you're listening to Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Jeremy Matlow is commissioner for City of Tallahassee C3. He ran on this idea that there is one Tallahassee. And that's been his message, reaching out into neighborhoods that sometimes get overlooked. Reaching out in neighborhoods that are not necessarily going to get the attention of the general public, unless something bad happens. But he's also been proactive in listening to people in more, we'll say, affluent neighborhoods when they're talking about roads and expansions that they're not necessarily inviting. It seems to me that we have in this man a commissioner who is doing his darndest to try to be accountable, not only to the things that he personally thinks are significant, but are important to all of us in keeping with the idea that we are one Tallahassee. Let's welcome Commissioner Jeremy Matlow. How are you, sir?
Doing pretty well. Good morning.
Did I say that properly?
That sounded pretty good.
I read from the script all that right. You gave me, so I hope that I did
we'll it allow it
the way you like. I mean, you know, you're not running for office at the moment, but I'm hoping that your people would appreciate those comments. Sincerely, that is exactly how I feel about you. That's exactly what I think. Nobody has to script that for me, because early on, when you and I first met years ago, I had never found somebody in local politics, particularly, we'll say local government, even in business, who was as accessible and as, I don't know, maybe the word is overused, transparent. Where does that come from for you?
Oh, man, that's a good question. Just trying to lead by example. You know, I grew up in the hospitality industry, and so our whole business has been about serving people and helping people and just finding kind of common ground and understanding. So I think that's kind of what I wanted to bring into government.
When you say growing up, you don't necessarily mean chronologically, but because you started doing Gain Street Pies how many years ago now?
It's been about seven years. Yeah. But I worked in the restaurant industry since I was 15.
Oh, so, really? Yeah. Okay. Well, okay. Then illegitimately you're saying, yeah, I know I was getting my props then. I learned how to care for people. Was that something that was just sort of natural for you when you found yourself in those serving situations?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it instilled from birth. I was raised by a single mother of four kids, and you know, she tried her hardest, but that was the one thing I think we really took away from her after she passed, was just the compassion that she showed for other people. Like, even in our circumstance of struggling, to see her, you know, stop and bring food to a homeless person, even though we were struggling to have food ourselves. And just that, it's, you learn it as a kid and you just see it. And it just became innate that we're all supposed to be here to look after one another, care for our neighbors. And, you know, she really instilled that early on in our lives.
Are you the oldest among your siblings?
No, I'm almost the youngest. I have a younger sister and a few older brothers.
Yeah. And do you stay in touch, all of you?
Yeah, my sister lives in town, so we see each other frequently. My other brothers, one lives in Texas, and one travels around the country a bit.
Yeah. Do you find yourselves recalling that history as much? Do you talk about those days, or is that just sort of, it's just part of the fabric?
Yeah, not too often. We don't really find ourselves reminiscing on that.
I remember your sister, during the campaign, being generous enough to get on camera and talk about the homelessness and the hunger that you experienced as a family. So in addition to bringing forward this level of compassion for others and a sense of public service, or let's just say kindness to others, you brought as well some pretty harsh memories.
Yeah, and that was a very emotional thing to do, because we don't talk about our challenges and our pain or our history very often. And
as a family,
yeah. And you know, she agreed to do that spot, and just we let the camera roll, and there were things we had never discussed personally that, you know, I found out things that she experienced that I hadn't known, just as she opened up and shared our experience growing up just in the campaign. Yeah. And I mean, it was really emotional, but I think so many people in our community have these types of scars or these types of memories. Yep. and just know what it's like to struggle. And that's kind of what we wanted to highlight, was, you know, struggle is widespread.
It doesn't belong to any one group or any one person, does it?
Not at all.
We all struggle in some way or another. Don Imus, God bless his soul, he used to say that a lot when I, back in the old days, when I was learning how to be a radio guy. I used to listen to Don Imus, one of the original shock jocks. Remember all that? And, you know, but he used to say, when you see somebody, just remember, they're dealing with the same stuff that you're dealing with. Mm-hmm. It just may have a different label, but everybody has stuff. And that seems like a very simple notion, right? Like, okay, right. So what does that mean? What it means to me is that you and I don't have to work at understanding what it's like for that person over there to be struggling. And the struggle may be not the one you and I have. Maybe yours isn't financial. Maybe it's not health. Maybe it's not relationship. But it's something. And when I think about my own childhood, I think about stuff that I walked through. And I came from a white family, privileged white high school, you know, middle class upbringing. But I can tell you that there was stuff that I dealt with as a kid. When you look at Tallahassee now and the stuff that we're dealing with as a community, it takes on a little different tone, doesn't it? It's not just personal anymore. Now it's, we'll call it corporate. It's collective, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think when we look at the city as a whole and we start looking collectively, so many people in our community are struggling, but all they're thinking about is, how am I going to get my next meal? You know, as a kid, you can remember when the last pack of ramen noodles were gone. There's nothing left in the freezer. You found all the change in the couch to go buy more bread. And there's just literally...
I'm still doing that.
Yeah, there you go. There's just literally nothing left, right? Yeah. And that's all that mission is. But I guess when you get to our position and you can look broadly at what causes these circumstances and how can we really address them, how many people in our community have extra food in their pantry who would willingly give it to someone in need, but we haven't made that connection. Yeah. And I think being privileged to be in the position that we can look at it kind of more globally, we have the responsibility to react and do more.
Talking with Commissioner Jeremy Matlow, you're in tune with Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
My dog was in bad shape, and I was scared. I had never seen her so sick, and my mind was racing. What to do? Who to call? I mean, I raised her from a puppy. She's like my best friend. A few years ago, she developed diabetes, and I've been following her daily regimen carefully. But that morning, something just wasn't right. She could barely move, and I thought, I'm losing my dog. I called a friend, and he said, call Dr. Pliskin. So I called Mahan Animal Clinic. They put me through immediately, and Dr. Pliskin said to get her there right away. Turns out, her blood sugar had dropped dramatically, but he knew exactly what to do. I guess you know. There's no other place I would go knowing that Mahan Animal Clinic and Dr. Pliskin are there for me and Aerith.
Special people and special care for those you love. Mahan Animal Clinic on Mahan Drive near Costco. On the web at mahananimalclinic.com or call 402-0557. More beauty, less bully. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Talk about the challenges of poverty, hunger in our community, and it's a theme around here that we continue to underscore. It's a message that we bring with our Tallahassee Food Challenge. Folks, you know this, that for the many years that we have run this campaign, it's really pretty simple, you know. And even our marketing message is take the challenge, fill a bowl, feed the hungry. What part of that do you not get? But to even move that forward further, you have guys like Jeremy Matlow over here with Gain Street Pies and taking their resources as a business and saying, yeah, we want to be a part of helping you pay for all of the advertising that will go into advancing that message. For me, it competes with every other advertising message out there, if you want to think of it that way. There's so many good causes, even in our own community, and we get invitations every day here with this show. Hey, can we get on your radio show and talk about? There are hundreds of requests, and they're all looking for that same bit of mind space. Well, for us, all of those other things are all very good projects and they're all good causes, but which charity is going to spend, you know, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 locally to advance their message? Very few, if any. So then we come to guys like you and say, hey, can you help us out?
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously a limited amount of resources for human services in general and how we can spotlight different issues. What I liked about Tallahassee Food Challenge was it really can magnify, you know, our spending power as a business. You know, we can donate a certain amount of food, or we could say, how do we get 1,000 people? How do we get 10,000 people to just give a little bit? Because I think if everybody could just give a little bit of food to people in need, we have the resources.
We have the food. Yep.
We just haven't connected them. So to keep it top of mind and keep people thinking and even knowing, a lot of people don't know that there are literally, you know, kids in our community that don't eat for the weekend and look forward to Monday so they can get a fresh meal at school.
Right. And we've talked to Monique Ellsworth about that with Second Harvest. So for you, you know, we talked already about your personal history, and you bring that to the conversation when you're sitting in session with your colleagues, other commissioners. Those kind of topics come up frequently.
I think it guides your decision making. You know, you could get stuck in a conversation about how expensive Star Metro may be, but not realize what it's like to walk 3 miles to a grocery store and walk back and have no vehicle to get there, and how much of a need that is for a low-income community.
Right.
And then balancing those decisions with new roadways that cost $80, $90 million, which we'll also have to fund to repair indefinitely. And at what point do we realize what a common good is? There was a good conversation at the CRTPA last week just about transit in general, and 25 years out, where do we want to be with transit? Do we want to continue to have 6, 7, 8 lane highways, you know, out to the suburbs, or do we just want to get more serious about our growth and how we get people around and make a system that's more equitable for everybody.
You know, it reminds me when I was a kid, my friend Jimmy Shaffa, his father was pretty rough guy. And no question in my mind that he was abusive with Jimmy and his sister. The house was a mess. They struggled all the time. Just for the day-to-day stuff. But he bought Jimmy a motorcycle for Christmas. Okay. Jimmy was 11 years old. So here sits this brand new, beautiful motorcycle in the driveway. Sometimes I think government says, we're going to buy you this really nifty, shiny, beautiful new thing. And we're looking at it going, well, thanks, but I'm unemployed, or I'm underemployed, or I'm part of that Alice population. Can you help me?
Yeah. Government doesn't necessarily have to be sexy. It should just do its basic job, which is, you know, providing the services we need equitably. Mm. Tallahassee, we're kind of stuck in this mindset that public dollars should just subsidize more and more growth and more development. I think development is helpful, but we don't necessarily need to put all of our public money into it when we have so many infrastructure problems already in our community. I'll point to the Northeast Gateway project going into Killarn. The Killarn neighborhood was actually opposed to the roadway and the impact it would have, and they forced the traffic study. And when that traffic study came back, without new development, only 500 cars a day would use that new road. We're talking $60, $70, $80 million. So that road's not alleviating traffic on Thomasville Road. It's not doing any of the things that kind of the blueprint tax promised it would do.
Yeah, right.
It's just providing for new development. And as we know, there's other projects. I think Tharp Street going out west.
Yeah.
Needs sidewalks. It's on the list, but it got kicked down the list. Orange Avenue by NIMS Middle School. You can't cross that road as a pedestrian without waiting 10 or 15 minutes.
No.
And got pushed down the
list.
And
put your life at risk.
Right. The neighborhoods are already here. They've already been here. People are already living here. And they need the government to recognize that and do its basic job before subsidizing more growth.
If you've defined growth as one thing and not another, right? Is that the issue?
Yeah. I mean, so how do we want to grow, right? There's a lot of conversation about growing the urban core versus sprawl and that sort of thing. But at the end of the day, we want to be good partners, I think, with the private sector to let development happen. But that shouldn't come at the expense of the taxpayers to subsidize it. If you're going to build a new road that's going to help income levels of six figures have new houses, you know, that's fine. But I think they can kind of afford to build their new roadways, and we can continue to invest in the roads that need it.
Who are your sharpest critics? Who are the folks that, and yeah, I'm not asking you to name people. I'm just saying, where do you find the most opposition, I guess, in terms of what you bring to any given conversation? What do you hear?
I think my wife is my sharpest critic and supporter.
Appropriately, yeah.
But, you know, look, we're pushing back against a system that's kind of assisted and helped the wealthy people for a long time. And I think for when you challenge that directly, based on just the human good and human needs, you know, people don't like that. It interjects what they're doing. And we're not pushing saying these things shouldn't happen. We're just saying there should be equity in public dollars, especially sales tax dollars. This is a tax everybody pays. The poor pay their penny sales tax.
Right.
The rich pay their penny sales tax. But when we look at the pushback, it's just who's doing it the better way? Is it more important to just see more and more growth? To me, you got to start from the very bottom. We need to expand what we already have and then grow out and collectively take ownership of that growth. But I think it's just a different opinion of how we go forward.
So here you are with this business acumen and your ability to figure out how to deliver a product that people actually want and are willing to pay for and remain competitive, because you're not the only pizza guy in town. Heavens no, this is a college town, right? If you can't sell pizza in Tallahassee. And yet the mayor says, come on, Jeremy, government doesn't run like a business. You know, you're over there saying, hey, how come the county commissioners make almost twice or better than twice what we do in terms of a annual salary? And so you and a couple of the other commissioners, I think Elaine Bryant and somebody else.
Commissioner Williams Cox.
Yeah. I think the three of you said, yeah, we're good for increasing that. Let's do that. And then you had Richardson and Mayor Daley say, nah, we're not going to do that. But I just remember his comment being, yeah, well, government doesn't run like a business. And it made me stop and think, well, why can't it run like a business? I'm going to let you answer that question. We're going to take a quick break. Okay. We've got Jeremy Matlow in the house, friend of the one Tallahassee. You stay with me.
Mardi Gras is February 25th, and Tasty Pastry Bakery is busy baking up their famous New Orleans king cakes just for you. This traditional cake is a coffee cake formed in an oval ring and decorated with brightly colored sugar, purple, green, and gold, to signify justice, faith, and wealth. Baked into each cake, a tiny plastic infant signifies Christ the King. When the cake is sliced, whoever gets the plastic infant in their piece of cake is named King for a day and is supposed to bring a king cake next year. Choose from an assortment of fillings: apple, cherry, blueberry, pineapple, raspberry, strawberry, or cream cheese. Get yours today. Tasty Pastry Bakery in the Market District on Market Street, 6:45 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday. Online at tastypastrybakery.com.
Your good old-fashioned bakery. Remember Tasty Pastry.
Call 893-3752.
Now we're really talking. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
So we were talking about government business models. What's your perspective?
Yeah, and you know, that's an interesting question. And the conversation revolved around going to the voters and asking what an appropriate pay scale for a city commissioner is, and really asking the voters what they expect out of a city commissioner. A lot of times we hear it's a part-time job, and a lot of times we hear commissioners say, that's not the case. I had to leave my full-time job to come do this. Yeah. Personally, I'm in a very fortunate position to have a business and be able to provide for my family based on what I already have. But the question really isn't about any individual personally. It's about the position and what we value it as a city. I see so many people in executive positions or management positions who would want to run for office and worry about, you know, what that would mean for their current job.
Right.
So there's a question of, if we want good public servants, what should we pay them so that they can give the job their all? They can hold staff accountable.
Right.
They can follow every issue. They can come to the events. Is that what we want from our city commissioner? I think people I talk to do want that. They want more engagement. They don't want someone just checking the box, rubber stamping something and moving forward. But that takes time, and it takes full time. I'm happy with whatever the voters decide, but I think it's appropriate to have the conversation of, what does a city commissioner look like to you, and how can we get the best commissioners to run in the future?
But even there, the mayor said, no, that's not the way to do this. I don't want to do this piecemeal. I don't want to put it up for a vote.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that was interesting. Charter amendments, any commissioner can put something. We can decide to put anything on the ballot. There was this big push to have an unrepresented body where we all appoint somebody and they come up with ideas to recommend us. But that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. We've gone through that in the past. You know, we've had consolidation conversations, those got shut down. We've had airport authority conversations, they got shut down. The truth is, if the people want an amendment, we already have a process, a petition process.
Right.
We got the ethics board out of that process when really the city really wanted to see a change. And there's another mechanism, which is at the elected official levels, where people voted for people to look after their best interest, that they could decide to put something on the ballot.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, I mean, it's a completely open and transparent process. I think when you have a side group, that's where things get complicated. All of a sudden, there's not as many sunshine rules, and there's a lot of things that happen behind closed doors.
So the accountability level goes way down.
Right, yeah. Who's lobbying these citizens groups? Right. And these aren't, you know, people who got elected or volunteered. These would be people, commissioners and elected officials appointed. Yeah. I mean, essentially you get into this proxy battle of what can happen behind the scenes, and that's not transparency. You know, that's changing the scope of the conversation, but the mayor, the other commissioners, if there's other ideas that should go on the ballot, I think we should all bring them forward, discuss them as a body, and if we approve one, let's move forward with it.
Well, you have as a template the fact that county commissioners are making, what, about $82,000, $83,000. You guys are coming in at $39,000?
Yeah,
like
that's
that.
About right. So the pay right now, we're tied to the county at 50% of what they make, and the mayor's office makes the same as the county commission. So, I mean, again, it's up to the voters, you know, maybe 60%, 70% of the county. Uh-huh, maybe we base it on population. But is it fair to have the conversation? We're so fortunate not to be the legislature where we're going to have midnight votes to raise our own pay and, you know, take advantage of the taxpayers' dollars. We're just asking, should there be the conversation? There should be. In private business, you have this conversation all the time of what your value is and ask your boss. And essentially, this is a question to the boss.
Here's a kind of weird question for you. Do you ever get tired of people rolling their eyes every time you open your mouth? I mean, I have to say, I imagine myself sitting there watching this commission meeting, and you have those commissioners who have at times been, let's say, openly critical of your, I always think of you as the kid who pointed and said the emperor has no clothes. You know, you're the guy who doesn't paint inside the lines or the follow the numbers. You know, you just kind of look at it as it is and call it for what you see. And we were doing the Stuff the Bus event here a couple of weeks back, and here, you know, you were, Reese Goad is there and walking along, and you guys are smiling at each other, and I'm thinking, I'd love to have that opportunity. I'd like to be that fly on the wall. Because I don't see it as a personal thing for you. It's right. It is structural. It's like, I'm not trying to get rich here. I'm not trying to raise my salary. I'm trying to attract quality people to this job. And pay is a big part of that, isn't it?
Yeah.
So here again, you got somebody who was appointed as a city manager. I mean, Reese seems like a nice guy. So I didn't take that as a personal thing.
Yeah, no, we've been strictly professional in everything we do. We're going to, if we see, I'm a private business owner. What we do every day is look for improvements in how we can do better to deliver a better product. I bring that same perspective to government. I may only be here two or three more years, and I want to leave the best impact I can. As for people rolling their eyes, I just point to all the things that we've done together. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, Commissioner Williams Cox and I have brought real transparency to government with taking meetings outside of City Hall, worked hand in hand with the mayor to pass the most extensive ethics package the city has ever seen. And I look forward to the conversation we're having with Commissioner Richardson on CRTPA about putting Orange Avenue at the top of the list to make it the next project that we do. So we're accomplishing a lot. We're working together. We disagree on some things that we're going to continue to push for change. If something doesn't seem right, if something can be better, we want to be the best, and we're going to call it out every time we see something wrong.
And yet, it seems to me, a lot of people don't hear your criticisms in that way. They do take it as a personal affront, a personal slight. I thought when the comments came up about Reese Goad, and I saw some of the social media posts, and they were coming at you as if somehow this was a personal thing for you and they were going to attack you personally. It doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, a lot of people got focused on the messenger and lost the message. You know, the performance review of the city manager pointed out serious defects that we either needed somebody new or we needed a different type of leadership style. And when there's concern throughout the organization about trustworthiness and honesty, when there's concerns through the HR process about how you get promotions and how you get hired. When we have things like football tickets, which obviously the report was wrong compared to what we saw when the state ethics board put out their report.
Right.
It's like you can't look at that in a silo and say, okay, if this is the way you're going to operate, it's unacceptable. We either need somebody new or you need to do better.
Change.
And as a boss, that's what I'm always going to hold my employees accountable.
Well, I think we've done a good job in getting you in that position. And to all of those commissioners and the mayor who served this community, kudos and congratulations. You guys have done a great job and thus far. But, you know, we're holding you accountable. So, you know, if we see something you're doing we don't like, we're going to start writing about it on social media, of course.
Submit a zing.
Folks, Jeremy Matlow, City Commissioner, Seat 3, a friend of the people of Tallahassee and beyond. If you like pizza, let me just say, this is a non-political statement here. Try it out. Green Street Pies, not bad. Thank you, my friend. Thanks for being here this morning.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This is great.
Folks, that's what I've got for you here at the moment. Stay with me. We've got more Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny coming up in the second hour. We'll be right back.
July 9, 1755, near Fort Duquesne, now the city of Pittsburgh, a 23-year-old British officer leads his troops in battle during the French and Indian War. Though fired upon repeatedly, this young lieutenant colonel remains unharmed to the disbelief of the native warriors. 15 years later, a respected chief sat over a council fire with this same man. As he told all those listening, the Great Spirit protects this man and guides his destiny. He will become the chief of nations, and a people yet unborn will hail him as the founder of a mighty empire. The man was George Washington, who went on to become the commander-in-chief of the Continental Army and the first president of the United States. Celebrating our nation's quest for freedom and honoring all those who serve, our military, law enforcement, and first responders, from Dr. Eve James at Southern Smiles Family Dentistry in Quincy, 875-3908, and Sellers Tile on Capitol Circle Northeast, call 656-8455.
Hi, I'm Tom Flanagan. You're listening to Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Welcome back to the second hour. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny here. Just for you, my friend, who, make the effort to click the little button on your screen or on your phone, I guess, or however you're listening. Maybe you're on 93.3. Real Talk is the radio station in Tallahassee that carries this broadcast. Thanks to John and all the guys with 93.3 FM. And, of course, we're simulcast on Moose Magnificat Saturday mornings, 9 o'clock. Tallahassee's Radio to the World streaming at moosemagnificat.com. That's the station that has all local musicians playing their original songs. You want to hear the sound of Tallahassee? Well, there it is for you. Yeah, man. Good stuff. All kinds of folks in there. Royce Lovett, Drew Tillman, the New 76ers. On it goes, on and on and on. It's awesome stuff, and we're glad to be a part of that lineup so you can listen to our show Saturday mornings at 9, and then there's a repeat broadcast Sunday afternoons at 3 and on Wednesday afternoons at 5:30. In today's broadcast, we have already brought you a conversation with our good friend Jeremy Matlow, Commissioner for City of Tallahassee. I believe he's in Seat 3. Fascinating conversation there. If you happen to miss it, don't worry. Just like all of the shows that we bring you, it's archived for you. You can go to the website, TallahasseeTalks.com, click on the archive link. Or just better yet, do a search. Search for, and it'll bring up all those shows related to that search item. And you're good to go. And it's our pleasure to be able to do that for you because we, in fact, are devoted to the well-being of this here fine community that we are privileged to be a part of. Kind of mission-driven we are. That's why we like highlighting the things that show off better who we really are as a community. When we think of Tallahassee, we think, five counties, really. Maybe more, but certainly the metro area. That's the real Tallahassee, not a few zip codes. not just because you happen to live in a certain neighborhood, or maybe because you have friends who have influence, you know, or maybe you're one of those people, high profiled or whatever you may be, that, you know, that's part of Tallahassee. Glad that you are, if that's you. But, you know, if you're living down there on Orange Avenue or living over there in Gadsden County, yeah, and you're among the Alice population, well, guess what? You're part of the real Tallahassee. Good for you. Glad to have you. Glad to know you. And so as we celebrate Black History Month, it's good to bring to our program some of that information that relates to some of those communities that you and I probably don't frequent very often. And it's reciprocal. You know, it's one of the reasons why Richard Florida declared that Tallahassee was the most segregated city in the nation. It came out, you know, several years ago. But you have to understand that in his way of looking at it, it really had to do with the sharing of daily activity, the sharing of lifestyle, the sharing of resources even. And I mean, how easy is it for you to hop in the old buggy and saunter over to a local grocery store and you pick off the shelf whatever you want, whatever you need, and you're good to go. You know that there are a lot of neighborhoods, this is just not how it works. Lack of grocery stores, lack of transportation, lack of money, and those kind of get in the way of healthy, nutritional meals. So it happens that in our Tallahassee Food Challenge effort, we try to bring that awareness to you in a very decided way. I mean, if you go to our website, Tallahassee Food Challenge is there with all kinds of resource information, and there's even a place where you can donate directly to Second Harvest. A $10 donation in their hands will buy $40 worth of food. Think about that. So we figured, well, if we do this ad campaign, I mean, I could ask you to each give, you know, $100 or $10 or whatever, but I'd rather get thousands of people. If I got 10,000 people to give $1 to Second Harvest, $1. Well, that's, let's see, $10,000. Math still works. Oh, but in their hands, that 4-to-1 ratio means they're going to buy $40,000 worth of food. That translates into thousands of meals for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of families and kids. Man alive. You know, when you look at the economics of our community, yeah, there's a lot to be done to free up people who are otherwise entrenched. And we are the most income-entrenched county in the country, meaning that if you're born in Leon County, the chances of you ever making more money than your mom and dad are the lowest in the country. Yeah, that's called income entrenchment. Well, that's a problem that we can work on, and that's the kind of work that is worthwhile because, after all, what's good for you is good for me, and what's good for me is good for you because we are a community. We're not just a collection of neighborhoods. Going back to that whole segregated city thing, you know, you've heard me say this to you. I met this woman who was a branch manager at a credit union up on the northwest side of town. She had no idea what Cascades Park was or why it was important. And when I explained it to her, she had no interest in it. Because for her, her Tallahassee is up there around Lake Jackson, that part of the county. And so just kind of the way it goes. But that's the way it goes all over the Tallahassee area. So if we're going to contribute to one another in sizable ways, we really do have to start seeing ourselves as more than just a few households, more than just a few zip codes. Well, as we do so, we're going to learn more by looking at our own history. And it happens that in February, we have the chance to celebrate that history a bit, learn a bit more about that history, particularly as to the contributions Black Americans have made to us as a community. So here it is in February, Black History Month, as it's recognized. There's an event coming up this Thursday, the 27th, 6:30 to 8:30 p.m., and it's at the Thomasville Municipal Auditorium. The American South, as we know it. It's a documentary, and then following that, a dialogue. 6:30 to 8:30 at Thomasville Municipal Auditorium. The American South, as we know it. Check that out. Looks like it's free admission, but that's going to be available to you as part of this Black History Month observance. We're going to learn a lot more, too, as we bring our next guest to the mic. He's the director of the Black Archives, Meek Eaton Black Archives at FAMU. And you're going to learn a lot about that whole project and what it means to this community as we welcome Nasheed Madyun. He will be with us here momentarily, so stay with me.
Mardi Gras is February 25th, and Tasty Pastry Bakery is busy baking up their famous New Orleans king cakes just for you. This traditional cake is a coffee cake formed in an oval ring and decorated with brightly colored sugar, purple, green, and gold, to signify justice, faith, and wealth. Baked into each cake, a tiny plastic infant signifies Christ the King. When the cake is sliced, whoever gets the plastic infant in their piece of cake is named King for a day and is supposed to bring a king cake next year. Choose from an assortment of fillings: apple, cherry, blueberry, pineapple, raspberry, strawberry, or cream cheese. Get yours today. Tasty Pastry Bakery in the Market District on Market Street, 6:45 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday. Online at tastypastrybakery.com.
Like your good old-fashioned bakery. Remember Tasty Pastry.
Call 893-3752.
Good morning, friends. This is your friend, Dr. Benjamin Franklin. We're talking with Brian Cerny on Tallahassee Talks.
In 1971, the Florida legislature mandated the creation of a repository to serve the state by collecting and preserving source material on and about African Americans from ancient to present times. As it is quoted, this particular mandate gave birth to what would later become the Black Archives Research Center and Museum. We have with us this morning the director of that aforementioned Black Archives, Dr. Nasheed Madyun. How are you, sir?
I'm doing just fine. Thanks for having me.
You're looking well.
Thank you.
Glad that you could find some time in your schedule, because I know that it gets a bit dicey. You got a lot going on. And this is an organization, better said, an activity and a contribution, an installment that the university has taken great care in providing and advancing. You've been at the helm now for some time, haven't you? What's your history?
Well, I've been with the FAMU Black Archives for about 4.5 years now.
I got you.
And I originally worked for about 5 years as the museum director and archives director at Hampton University.
I see.
That's in Virginia.
Yes.
And I also served as the director of the Texas State History Museum in Austin, Texas. And I had the opportunity to help to build and lead the Stax Museum of American Soul Music.
Oh, man.
In Memphis, Tennessee. That was fun. And
I was going to say, that was probably a very boring job.
Yeah. And with some of those artists, I was able to make a bridge, and I worked as the president and general manager of the Gibson Retail Group. That's a division of Gibson Musical Instruments.
Right.
And so I had a stint in state, private,
cool,
as well as
that?
Corporate America.
How cool is that?
I also had a chance to work for the mayor of Memphis as one of his special aides, doing an interesting time in their growth. But been around and had the opportunity to look at art, music, and history. And this institution that I'm with now forged me the opportunity to look at all aspects of
bringing African that all together.
Culture. Yes, it's been a
what a great intersection for you.
Yeah, it's been a joy. Yes, it has.
Imagine. Mm-hmm. And this is a life's work for you. You
yes. somewhat. And this is a very odd story. I grew up in Arkansas, huh. And there's a lot of blues history in Arkansas. A lot of agricultural business history in Arkansas with cotton and tobacco and timber. But I went to school in college in Mississippi. Huh. And what's just right across the Mississippi River for me.
Right.
And I took up business courses and tried to pursue a business major. I kept taking history classes. And I had a professor pull me to the side and said, why are you taking so many history classes? And you're excelling better than some of my history majors. And with some of your criticisms of some of these topics, had you considered this field? And I said, well, not really. What can I do? How can I make some money in this field?
Is there a paycheck involved?
Right, yeah. Right. Can I? And he said, well, you know, here, huh. you may want to take a look at John Hope Franklin at Washington University. His father was a part of the Black Wall Street Tulsa riots in the 1920s. There's some history there.
Wow.
Take a look at museums. And I said, you know, what do museums do? And there were not a lot in that area at the time, but maybe you want to contribute and write a book or something like that. And so wow. It was intriguing, and this was a very tall, statuesque white gentleman who pulled me to the side.
So you were in your early 20s, likely.
Yeah, it was my early 20s.
Yeah,
It was actually the day of the Oklahoma City bombing.
You're kidding.
Yep, it was that was the day.
Wow.
1994, I believe.
Right.
I remember because I changed my major. He was so compelling, and the bells were ringing for people to change classes, and there were people on the quad crying about what they felt that just happened.
Yeah.
And we were having this in-depth conversation about the lack of African Americans dealing with our history.
Yeah.
And you have all of this turmoil around you.
Right.
And I'm looking to walk away. He would not let me leave. And there you have it.
That's remarkable.
Right. It's a story of individualism in each and every one of us. There's an arc in the story. When you talk about Black identity, you have to consider consciousness. And as a white man in America or a white woman in America, you have a very clear understanding of opportunity and some examples. But Black consciousness, W.B. Du Bois at the turn of the previous century, coined a phrase, double consciousness, and that when you walk out your front door, you're not only an American, but you're a Black American. And what does that external conflict have to do with your internal conflict? So when Jim mentioned the fact that you have to accept that opposition of racism, you also have to accept the steps that you have to take to rise. Your steps may be harder to pull, higher to leap, especially if you're a Black woman. So there's a triple consciousness when you look at the glass ceiling and identity. So African-American art, African-American music, science and technology, it's woven into the American fabric. Institutions like the Black Archives, the responsibility is not to extract so much as to identify those unique points of excellence so that we can see that not just African Americans, but German Americans, Japanese Americans, who also had their challenges in the United States, Italian Americans had their challenges, but it brings about a question of humanities, and what is the design of America? What is at the core? It's not politics, it is local, you know, where you live and how you walk, what's in your grocery store. What do you allow in your grocery store? What do you try to expel? Do you have the power to do that? The social contract, you know. John F. Kennedy spoke about the role of people in a community. What should you do and what should you expect? But that's an American ideal. And when you look at identity, sometimes you overlook the fact that the expectation for first, second, and third class Americans may be different. And what is your role if you see that?
talking with Dr. Nasheed Majun. He is here to bring us in touch with the work that is the Meek Eaton Black Archives, Florida Agricultural Mechanical University.
Yes.
And we are pleased to have you with us. Stay with me, folks. I've got more coming up right after this.
My dog was in bad shape, and I was scared. I had never seen her so sick, and my mind was racing. What to do? Who to call? I mean, I raised her from a puppy. She's like my best friend. A few years ago, she developed diabetes, and I've been following her daily regimen carefully. But that morning, something just wasn't right. She could barely move, and I thought, I'm losing my dog. I called a friend, and he said, call Dr. Pliskin. So I called Mahan Animal Clinic. They put me through immediately, and Dr. Pliskin said to get her there right away. Turns out her blood sugar had dropped dramatically, but he knew exactly what to do. I guess you know. There's no other place I would go knowing that Mahan Animal Clinic and Dr. Pliskin are there for me and Aerith.
Special people and special care for those you love. Mahan Animal Clinic on Mahan Drive near Costco. On the web at mahananimalclinic.com or call 402-0557.
Bringing you whatever Tallahassee is talking about this week. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
We have with us Dr. Nasheed Majun talking about black consciousness.
Yes.
Right?
What is your why? What is your how? Mm. You know, how are you going to accomplish these things?
And what are the options within that, right?
Yeah. You dance through a lot when you grow. And you have perspectives that your grandparents and parents impart on you. You have society and popular culture that's an influence. And stereotypes. But with archives in a museum, we have the opportunity to look back and provide an environment so that you can be retrospective, mm-hmm. reflective, and reflexive. Mm-hmm. And documents reveal that objectively. And intellectual property, design, thought. Here's a story that may spark some interest.
Mm-hmm.
There was a gentleman that came from very humble beginnings in South Florida, found his way through his athleticism to make it to the Florida A&M University's football team, the same football team that beat University of Miami in the late 70s.
Mm-hmm.
That's a story within itself. But this individual, no one knew that he was a genius. And when he graduated, people were happy, but saw that he was adorned with a 4.0 engineering degree from the university. Well, we didn't know he was that smart. He ends up going to the NFL as well as Stanford University. And right now, his intellectual property, his design, the mini-wave technology, his name is Dr. Tim Charles. Once you walk through an airport, you have to throw your hands up. And there is a machine that scans your body for inappropriate guns and what have you, knives. That's his technology.
Wow.
From Florida A&M. But you never would have known.
Right.
And he did not communicate his talents because of stereotype. Mm-hmm. Also, the balance between opportunity. And he became a wealthy man, not in athletics, mm-hmm. but in science and technology. He has since adopted and put through community colleges some 28 youth.
Mm.
You know, amazing stories that now you read that story, you hear about that story, and you come across it in a museum.
Yeah, yeah.
You're forced to think about what am
right.
I doing?
Right.
And how do I feel about stereotypes now?
Here's the history in front of you. Your emotional response to that is yours.
It's yours to keep.
And yet in that course of time, I'm looking here, the more than 160,000 people have visited this center and do so, or it says visit the center annually.
Annually. We have a wonderful mix of day travelers coming from Atlanta or Pensacola, school groups coming
really?
From Florida State University.
So it's a destination for yes. tourists.
We have some unique collections. Yes, we have some very unique collections. This is February. From January to March, we have our busiest school group time.
Mm.
During the summer, family reunions. It's a popular destination.
Would it be fair to say that you're better known outside of Tallahassee than you are among Tallahassee's own citizens?
Yes, yes. We have a great broad respect in the southeastern region of the United States.
It's astounding.
Certainly from South Georgia. We get a large influx of travelers from South Georgia and West Florida.
So many of our guests over so many years that we've been doing this have pointed to Tallahassee's siloed way of thinking and living. You know, even guys like Richard Florida, and he writes this or publishes this review of census data saying Tallahassee's the most segregated city in America. Yeah, and that came out about 5 years ago.
I would have to disagree, and I'm new to Tallahassee.
Yeah.
I find Tallahassee to be extremely welcoming.
Yeah.
You can go into coffee shops and bookstores in Midtown, like the Midtown Reader,
right.
and sit and enjoy yourself. Or you can go to Banbridge area and listen to some blues.
Right.
And which is I have an affinity for,
You
know, live music. And on the south side, you can smoke a cigar. There's a good mix of good people.
Interesting point. So you and Gary Anton known each other pretty well, probably, out there at Bradfordville Blues Club. Shameless plug here. We broadcast live every Saturday night on Moose Magnificat, the Bradfordville Blues Club.
So excellent.
Put that in your daytime.
Well, I may see you this Saturday. Yeah, how
man.
About that?
it's a great, great experience. The fact is, when Richard Florida published that work, it was met with a great deal of dismay, especially among Chamber of Commerce people. Mm. And the comment was, well, that's not the real Tallahassee that Richard Florida's looking at. And the perspective was simply this. He was looking at, and when we use the word segregation, he's talking about the separation of both racial, ethnic, and economic and lifestyle groupings, right? So he really was looking at how the community, the population, is segmented in a way that keeps us in our little bubbles. And what you're pointing to is access. You're not restricted and you're able to enjoy all kinds of different places and activities, and you're not being confronted. And in that way, yes, I think Tallahassee has established itself well in contrast to where we were, let's say, 70 years ago or better, or even 60 years ago. We just now this last week, the 60th anniversary of the Tallahassee lunch counter sit-in, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
This notion of us being a segregated community really comes back to us living and working in our little circle. And here's the Black Archives over here at FAMU. And when I bring that to people, they'll say, well, I didn't know that existed. If I talk about the Tallahassee Museum, they don't know what that is. If I tell them, hey, Cascades Park, what do you think? They don't know what that is. And that kind of, I don't know what to call it. It's almost sedentary.
Right.
You're just plodding along the path that you've,
it's very
created for yourself.
It can be very isolationist, but it doesn't have to reflect the metal of a community.
Yeah.
You have a set of railroad tracks that represents some level of commerce 40, 50, 60 years ago. And for some people, that also represented freedom, access to another land. But that symbolism does not have to resonate today. It is up to us, individuals who are enlightened, to say, let's open the doors so that you feel welcome. And once you welcome individuals into your doors, into your home, quote unquote, then you may find out that there's a consciousness and understanding that's very similar, and they cross barriers, just like ragtime music or, jump blues.
Yep. B.B. King was quoted as saying that when you're a blues player, you're black twice.
Right. Okay. Yes. 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 I had the opportunity to help distribute his 80th anniversary guitar when he turned 80. Mm. I had five diamonds in the headstock. Oh, wow. And he came to play in Memphis, and he also said that he erases the divide with the pluck of his strings. Mm. You know, because music is, that's harmony. And that's, if you're a spiritual man, when God said, he was speaking through music. You know?
Amen.
So, and then you talk about music, you know, that's a whole nother realm.
We Sister should. Rosetta Tharpe. We should have you back, and we'll just do that.
Yeah, we can go from Conway Twitty, which is from my hometown,
yes, and sir.
Levon Helm, and all the way up to
the band,
Stax Museum, the Stax Record Company, and Motown.
Wow.
There's or in this area, Muscle Shoals in Alabama.
He's a knowledgeable man, and he's our guest this morning, Dr. Nasheed Madyun. He is here to talk with us about this remarkable contribution to America's understanding of our own history, particularly Black history. He's the director for Meek Eaton Black Archives at FAMU, and you're in tune with Tallahassee Talks. Stay with me.
People trust Sellers for better tile, carpet, and hardwood flooring. Sellers Flooring Advisor Ryan Fitzgerald.
We understand most people don't come in with great knowledge of what they're looking for or what they need. So at Sellers, what we try to do is use our expertise to guide you through the process.
Get Sellers working for you.
We make it easy, and we have the experts on staff to get you where you need to be, and we give you the options.
On Capital Circle Northeast, just north of Mahan Drive, call 656-8453. Online at SellersTile.com.
Widen Glass has been taking care of business since 1945. When you call Widen Glass, you're dealing with experienced, reliable professionals who offer only the best. Like Widen's top-of-the-line bath enclosures that provide style and luxury at an affordable price. Eye-catching storefronts are a specialty at Widen Glass. We'll help you design it and install it. Widen Glass, the first name in glass replacement. Call 222-5781.
Hi, I'm Jerry.
And I'm Pete.
And we're with the Jerry Thigpen Trio. And you're listening to Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
We're back. We're talking with Dr. Nasheed Madyun. For the many years that you've been involved with this program, this museum, the collection is not static, is it? So you continue to receive contributions. Tell us about that process and some of the more recent things that you've come into have come into your possession there.
So a museum has a collection. To distinguish it between a gallery rotates, and individuals can come and buy and sell, but you can't buy and sell with a museum. A museum wants to accession an item into its collection and provide an identifiable marker and care and feed for that item.
I see.
And so, but you also have a collection policy, and there are things we accept and things we do not. And we have a story to tell, and hopefully we can collect items that continue to tell that story wherever we want to go with it. Sometimes we get a phone call. We get a phone call. I get plenty of phone calls, and there's a lady at the other end of the phone, and says, "I have a family member that just passed, and I believe she has some items that you would love to have." And you're skeptical, but you know they're rare finds, right? So, about early October, late September, I took a ride to Gainesville to see what I could see, and it turns out that a nice lady had collected over 3,000 African American dolls dating back to the 1920s. Porcelain, dresses made of silk, just very extravagant doll collection. And the doll collection had overwhelmed her household, to where she lived among these dolls. They were being donated.
Wow.
And it just so happens,
blew you away.
Yeah. And we'll take it all, right?
Yeah.
And I get back to campus. Serendipitously, we have a new professor, Kimberly Brown Pelham. She was FAMU Miss FAMU some years ago.
Okay.
Went to get her doctorate in African American history and came to us. This is her first year here, and her perspective is the Black woman aesthetic and the role of popular culture in Black women. So, well, we have this doll collection just received a couple of weeks ago, and she
must
screamed.
Have just she's fallen screamed. Out.
And so we're pulling together an exhibit that can talk in this year that we look at suffrage and the 19th Amendment and the role of women and voting and partisanship. We can also talk about how women are perceived and presented in popular culture. We'll do that in the fall of this year. So we'll be able to provide visual, material, culture in a scholarly setting. It's remarkable. But that's a remarkable collection and one of those slice of life stories that can make you cry.
Yeah, man.
But I also had the opportunity. Some of the stories are not as good, you know. It's heart-tugging, but... I also had the opportunity to walk through an attic of a granddaughter of a former KKK member. And you come across ropes with blood stains still on them. And you're able to peruse the ritual of 1921 KKK manual from Texarkana.
And when you're having to confront those artifacts, clearly the emotions for you have to run the gamut. But you're having to, at the same time, approach that as an academician.
Right.
You're looking at this with a sort of dispassionate way of approaching the object, the item, as part of this ongoing story, unfolding story.
Yes.
It's got to be tough.
It can be difficult to be objective when you look at current politics and you have to say whether or not powers are being abused or not. And you frame history as with Black history, there are waves of the KKK, and are we witnessing a new wave of oppression? Only history will be able to reveal that because we're living through it. And you see items published. You see a stamp for papers to be signed that reflect a time period when it was okay to present this type of behavior, accept that type of behavior, and project it onto a class of people, quote unquote, class of people, so that you can cast them in a particular light. And we're only talking about 100 years ago. You know, the manual, the ritual that I held from 1921 in Texarkana KKK manual. You know, we're looking at just 100 years ago that people in their 20s, 30s, and 40s, for whatever reason, were threatened by individuals just trying to live their life and put food on their table.
Yeah. And in the world's history, that's a blink of an eye.
Yes.
100 years is nothing.
We have the luxury of social media. There are traditional mediums, like my father was also a newspaper man and a radio talk show host. And you have the luxury of being able to look at different sectors of the community. And with that ability to switch the lens or the aperture on your camera, we also should be able to look at contemporary issues and be a voice. Take a look at this stop and frisk piece that keeps coming back up because of the election, and we look at the horrors that crime can impart on the community, but there are different lenses. There are businesses that are trying to protect themselves from a variety of nuances, but you also have the families who have to say, we need to take a protectionist stance and teach our kids how to navigate a block corner or get to school and come home, go to after school programs without being thrown up against a wall. And so that one policy That one policy affects different segments mm-hmm. of the community.
In different ways.
In different ways. We have on, as a part of our mandate, as a research center, mm-hmm. we've started to produce an academic journal. And the main prism of that journal is policy and how policy can be created to affect a part of society, or how policy has been created mm-hmm. and it has affected society. Mm-hmm. And we've been able to explore, and we will continue to explore, maybe we contribute new thought. And that's a responsibility we have once we become enlightened.
A great place to start, in my view, would be to make it a mandatory visit. Get over to the Meek Eaton Black Archives. Put yourself front and center, square in the face of this history that is represented to us. And it is our history. And it's portrayed through all of these various artifacts, all of the contributions to this remarkable museum there at FAMU. Dr. Nasheed Madyun, our guest and the director for this remarkable facility. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for the time today. Folks, that's what I have for you this week. We are the production of Spatterwork Media and Entertainment. Carl Cerny is our executive director, coming to you on Moose Magnificat Internet Radio, streaming the sound of Tallahassee, all local musicians playing their original songs. That is Moose Magnificat. Find us online at moosemagnificat.com. I'll be looking for you again next week. So come on, Tallahassee, come talk to me.
Witten Glass has been taking care of business since 1945. When you call Witten Glass, you're dealing with experienced, reliable professionals who offer only the best. Like Witten's top-of-the-line bath enclosures that provide style and luxury at an affordable price. Eye-catching storefronts are a specialty at Witten Glass. We'll help you design it and install it. Witten Glass, the first name in glass replacement. Call 222-5781.